Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, we welcome back our friend from Galaxy, Alex Thorne. Alex, what's up, dude?
Hey, Nick. Great to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. Alex, let's talk about your recent report on crypto VC. Allegedly, it's dead. What's going on out there? What are the numbers? And walk us through why interest has fallen. And then, of course, you can tie it back into Bitcoin and where we are in the cycle.
Yeah, you know what? Let me even start with the last point about Bitcoin and crypto VC. I've been producing this chart that overlays the crypto venture capital invested in startups with the Bitcoin price, literally since maybe 2016 or 17 when I was at Fidelity. I've been making the same chart. And, you know, it looks as you may expect. For years, they were very correlated, right? I mean, VC tended to lag a little bit until 2021. So you had a big run up in 2017, Bitcoin hits 20,000. It was like 2018 was a big period for crypto VC. It was sort of like they weren't there. The Bitcoin price appreciation happened so quickly that it took like a couple months for venture funds to start like using that crypto rally as a story to raise new vehicles for venture. But then in 2021, these rose dramatically at like the same time, right? Like the venture capitalists were out there with the story in front of the allocators, and you saw huge amounts of money invested in crypto startups in 21 and 22. I mean, we're talking like 8 to 12 billion per quarter invested, an insane amount of money. Since the crash of 22 or the end of 22, obviously Bitcoin drew down to like 16,000, 16,500 at the end of 2022. Crypto VC had, by my count, bottomed in terms of the amount invested by the venture funds in the startups at like below 2 billion per quarter. And that's what I have for Q3 2023. It's not rebounded much. Meanwhile, Bitcoin has more than tripled off that bottom, right? So there's a question as to why that's really interesting. The other interesting thing in this, which we can talk about, I mean, I think the other interesting thing in this story is we also look at the other side of the VC coin, which is the venture funds trying to raise for themselves. So you've got the startups being invested in by the funds, but then new funds launching and who's investing in those funds. That's typically allocators, right? Pensions, endowments, high net worth individuals. We saw this quarter as the smallest amount of new funds raised, the smallest amount of money since Q3 2020. It is very hard out there to raise new crypto-focused venture funds. There are some bright spots. I mean, the Bitcoin L2 space has been a very active venture space this year, but it's hard out there for crypto VC in this market, which is also super interesting, again, considering that Bitcoin is, you know, more than tripled off its 2022 low. A lot of other stuff I could say in there, but I'll stop there, Nick.
The Bitcoin Layer is sponsored by Unchained, the undisputed leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults in which you own 2 of 3 keys and you gain a Bitcoin security partner. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage via Unchained's trading desk and eliminate all exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA in the industry, where you can convert your existing 401ks or retirement accounts to Unchained, all while keeping control of your Bitcoin private keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Talk to Unchained today. Go to unchained.com/TBL for $100 off when you sign up. Don't risk your Bitcoin security. Do you have Bitcoin private keys stored on paper? Make sure you convert those keys to titanium with Stampseed. Stampseed has this really cool DIY kit that allows you to hammer in your seed phrase into these small titanium plates that are fire resistant and damage resistant. This kit is designed by titanium metal workers that have been working in stamping metal for over 14 years, and your words are deeply stamped, not just a shallow dot. So make sure you check out stampseed.com today and use code TBL for 15% off of your order. What's your grand takeaway? I mean, does it mean that we're going into some sort of bearish season because there's no interest from crypto VC, or is it the opposite because they're a counter indicator? And you know, Alex, we're not looking at crypto VC numbers to give us a a tip on where the Bitcoin price is going. We use other metrics, but I'm just asking your opinion if there's any signal from this.
I think it's more the historically it's been more the reverse. I think the Bitcoin price as a proxy for growing crypto asset markets has driven interest in gaining exposure to digital assets broadly by allocators, and with a lack of, you know, publicly regulated available liquid vehicles, like we now have ETFs, but we didn't for a long time. The inability for a lot of these, you know, pensions, endowments, school endowments, whatever, they weren't able to buy and hold spot Bitcoin. The qualified custody market wasn't very developed, etc. So a lot of them turned to venture as an outlet to express interest in that nascent space, which sort of as a proxy, I use the Bitcoin price. Frankly, I could use the total cryptocurrency market cap, but I've just been using the Bitcoin price for years for that. That's changed dramatically, right? There are a lot more ways to gain exposure. And simultaneously, so on the one hand, if you are an institutional allocator today, right, they were always comfortable doing venture capital, crypto or otherwise. They for years had our big investors in venture capital funds. So that was one reason for the explosion in 21 and 22. No liquid vehicles, lots of interest. Let's put it in our venture bucket and move on. One of the interesting things about that approach was that if you did that approach, you were structurally short Bitcoin, right? You're trying to gain exposure to digital assets, but something like 99% of crypto VC dollars went to non-Bitcoin native companies, right? I mean, the closest Bitcoin companies that would raise would typically be like exchanges, which, you know, are just crypto trading companies. They're not really Bitcoin focused. So if you only got exposure during that time through crypto VC, you were likely structurally short Bitcoin. If you were trying to create an index of the market, right? So part of the pitch back then was, okay, well, fine, buy Bitcoin and then do crypto VC to gain exposure to the rest of the market. Today, that looks very different, right? So the crypto VC funds are being competed against by the Bitcoin and now Ether ETFs, right? If you're a pension. And we've seen this, right? I think one of the most prominent that came out in Q2 in the 13F filings for the Bitcoin ETFs was the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. A large pension bought a bunch of Bitcoin ETFs. Theoretically, if you're going into that investment, that pension and pitching some form of digital asset exposure, they're now going to say, well, I mean, we already have this Bitcoin ETF exposure. So like they're probably thinking of it as competitive, but there are other factors as to why crypto VC is down big over the years. More recently, one, a very clear one, is rising interest rates, right? I mean, these endowments are very sensitive to rates. Risk is sensitive to rates. It's not nearly as attractive to, when you can earn like 5-6% on a risk-free rate to start putting money into these like highly speculative vehicles. So all of venture capital outside of Bitcoin, outside of crypto, has declined significantly since 21 and 22. That's a factor. Another is that a huge number of generalist VCs, so think like the big giant ones like Sequoia, right? And the allocators, several that got deeply involved in the crypto VC market in 21 and 2, they got burned pretty bad, right? Like most of those companies that went bankrupt, the Celsiuses, the BlockFi's, the Voyagers, like these were venture-backed startups and in some cases invested in directly by large allocators, but many of them, and FTX obviously, backed by big generalist VCs, right? So there's like a little bit of a hangover from that, I think, still. And then the third answer, which I actually think is the most interesting, is that this year's market, and frankly, we could go back to 23 to present, right? Because there were some hiccups in the middle of 23 with Bitcoin price, but in general, we basically went from 16.5 at the start of 2023 to like four in the 40K range at the end of 2023, then up to the 70K range in March. And now we've been, you know, like 50 to 70K for 6 or 8 months. This market has been characterized by a significant institutional interest in Bitcoin specifically, with the anticipation of the ETFs and the launch of the ETFs. Now the, you know, something like $60 billion under management in the ETFs, $20 billion in net inflows. It's a very Bitcoin driven market. You can see this in things like the ETH BTC ratio is a good example, or Bitcoin dominance. ETH BTC ratio is in like multi-year lows. Bitcoin dominance is at its highest level since basically like there weren't many altcoins around, right? Part of this is the market is not, this is not, hasn't really been a crypto bull market. This has really been a Bitcoin driven market. And then on the other side, has been like meme coin frenzy, right? There's not, the middle is like, and so I've been calling it a barbell market. You sort of have like extreme value in Bitcoin or deep value, long-term value versus like the most ephemeral, cynical, speculative trading on the far other side, which is fine. I'm not judging it, but like that entire middle is the stuff that VCs have been investing in, right? Like they, like I said, the vast majority of crypto venture capital, over 100 billion since 2016, has not gone to Bitcoin companies. And meme coins sort of as a narrative are almost taking like a Wall Street bets approach to the market, right? They're almost anti-VC by nature. There are a few that have been able to invest in like, I can't believe I say this in, you know, 2024, the year of our Lord, but like meme coin infrastructure has been invested in. Pump.fun is a very notable one. But broadly speaking, it's hard for institutional investors or VCs to gain access to whatever comes out of the meme coin frenzy. So like, I think it's been a uniquely challenging period for crypto venture capital. You know, I think that could change, but it almost certainly will change. You know, time is long. But I will say probably the main catalyst would be a Trump victory if that remakes the crypto regulatory landscape. Bitcoin fares well in either case. I think you've talked about this a fairly large amount, I think. But altcoins uniquely outperform under a Trump overhaul of the regulatory regime. So I think you probably see some turnaround in that as the main catalyst. But I mean, we're at like among the hardest times for a new crypto VC fund to launch in basically the modern market in crypto.
So you're telling me that tomatoes on the blockchain and the Bored Ape Yacht Club didn't give the venture capitalists 25% compounding growth over a 5-year time horizon?
Yeah, it's you know, it might be surprising. You'd think this. I thought monkeys on the blockchain would be okay. Hey, I'm still holding out hope for tomatoes on the blockchain. I remember those IBM Maersk commercials. I love tomatoes, and I'm, you know, I'd like more certainty about their provenance.
Alex,
I mean, I guess I can just go to the farmer's market and buy them directly from the farmer and know the provenance that way. But
yeah, we'll keep the blockchain. We'll keep the blockchain out of the farmer's market, hopefully.
Yeah.
Alex, I do want to talk to you about at Galaxy, just tying all of this together. Very low interest in crypto VC is what Alex is telling us. You have this purview with your fund performance overview or your platform that you guys have, and it lets you see quantitatively how little interest there is. And I want to just tie one thing in that Alex said earlier about, I have personal experience with this exact thing in the endowment space, where I'm talking to an endowment, a very large university endowment. And the only way that they're willing to get involved, this is 4 years ago, 5 years ago, the only way that they were willing to get involved was through VC. There was no vehicle. It wasn't even a possibility that Bitcoin could be in their portfolio, because it didn't even fit within any remote guideline that they had. There was no language. So it would have to go through a whole proposal to even get to an annual review. So it was years away back then. And it's clearly not years away. It is readily available via iBit. And Alex works at a company that also has one of these products. There's a bunch of them out there. People are allocating, and I mean state pension funds are allocating to these vehicles. So it makes a ton of sense that ETFs, of course, are at play, but also the death of the idea that Ethereum-based ecosystems are the future of this entire space. We see the ETH-BTC ratio, and it just doesn't suggest that that's the case. So I'm curious your follow-up there.
I think empirically, you're very, very right. I think what I'm most happy about is, regardless of whether broad crypto is going to have big success, right? I'm very excited that you finally have the Bitcoin story being understood by top institutional capital. there were times when I would pitch Bitcoin in these types of meetings, and I would say what I said before, right? If you only do crypto VC, which is great. I mean, we have a crypto VC. We raised $115 million or something two quarters. Like, it can be done, by the way, right? Like, savvy, well-connected managers that know the space really well can raise. It's not like dead. But I would say, like, if you're a big endowment, like, again, you're structurally short the best performing asset of the last 15 years, one that's at a minimum more than half of the entire crypto market. Like, why would you try to get an index on a market and not own the number one name in the market, right? I mean, so that was always really stupid, right? I mean, even today, like, Ethereum's a 17% market cap dominance, right? So, like, there is no second best genuinely when it comes to pure importance in liquid crypto beyond Bitcoin. So I'm very happy that I think that's been widely recognized now. You know, I will say, like, this wasn't, you know, there was a lot of misreporting about what Larry Fink said the other day. It was very bullish for Bitcoin. He said it's its own asset class. BlackRock's been aggressively pitching Bitcoin as a hedge to dollar debasement and in global instability. It's a great way of pitching it. They are extremely bullish on Ethereum. He said that in particular in those same statements. So, like, I'm not ready to rule out the future where we have, you know, other things on decentralized blockchains beyond decentralized digital self-sovereign gold like money. But I mean, you're crazy if you look at the market and think, oh man, let me own like the second, third, or fourth and not the number one. I think Bitcoin has product market fit and the rest is really looking for it still at best. I mean, yeah, it very much remains to be seen.
All right, I want to ask you a few rapid fire questions here. The recent HBO documentary made a lot of headlines. I did get a chance to watch it. I did my own video review. People could go check that out on the channel. It's a mixed review in that I was engaged in the screen. I couldn't take my eyes away from the screen for a decent portion of it. With that being said, there was a lot of misguided, in my opinion, the way that some of that film was put together. So I'll let people go check out my review there. My focus, Alex, is after a few days passed, I genuinely understood this for the first time. And you know, I've been a Bitcoiner for quite some time, and I love the phrase that we are all Satoshi, but I felt it in my bones what it meant more than ever after watching that film and after letting a few days go by. And I'll explain what I mean. We are all Satoshi means that Satoshi has made an effort not to reveal who Satoshi is. That is something that we have to accept at its face value. We also have to accept that several of the people who are thought to maybe have had a role, either directly or indirectly, have said, I am not Satoshi, meaning those people do not wish to be Satoshi. And in that way, we are all Satoshi because Satoshi Nakamoto has chosen this life of the founder that went away, that isn't going to come back. And it's been a profound realization. I'm going to just be honest that I've had a lot of, you know, curiosity about the who is Satoshi thing, who hasn't. You and I have had conversations about this on and offline. And I wanted to just give you an update of where I am mentally in this process. So what are your thoughts on the film and the effort to unmask and why, or just give me your thoughts, Alex, on this.
Yeah, I totally agree with your take on this, Nick. First, I mean, people who want to remain anonymous, whether Satoshi Nakamoto or, you know, Greg, whatever that number is after his screen name on Twitter are, right? Like, I think it's unethical and immoral to dox people, period. Doesn't matter what they are or where, what venue they're anonymous in. I believe strongly in the liberty to have anonymous speech. Enormous portions of America's founding documents and literature and discourse was conducted by founding fathers, quote unquote, under pseudonyms, an enormous amount. I mean, go just look at the Wikipedia page for founding father pseudonyms. There's literally dozens and dozens, right? Alexander Hamilton wrote his, what Publius, right? Like there's an enormous number. It's actually a very prominent feature of America's own founding that anonymous speech, effectively online speech, letters to editors of newspapers where they all share their ideas through that medium of the time anonymously. So one, I think it's unethical and immoral to dox people. Two, I think it's an important part of exercising free speech, the ability to do so anonymously. And three, I think it would obviously be bad, I think, for both Satoshi, if he is alive, and he, not like it matters much, but he did identify on the P2PFoundation.org profile as a male from Japan. Now, his birthday was the 1971 decoupling of gold there. So maybe that's all made up, but I'm just saying, like, I tend to refer to Satoshi as a he because of this, but Satoshi did say that he didn't want to be unmasked. And if he is alive still, he obviously wouldn't want to be. There's no indication he wants to be. So that would be very damaging to that person. Nobody knows how much Bitcoin Satoshi has. There's the leading theory based on Sergio Lerner's Satoshi pattern is, you know, a million Bitcoin or somewhere thereabouts. Like, if somebody has a million Bitcoin, they are a massive target for kidnapping, you know, wrench, $5 wrench attacks, $10 wrench attacks now after inflation. Right. And it's danger to their family. We've seen this. We've seen Dorian Nakamoto harassed and his family, who was named by the Newsweek story. We've seen Hal Finney's family harassed by people. We've seen Len Sassaman's family harassed even just recently. So it's a mean and rude thing to do, but also it would damage Bitcoin's value. Bitcoin, a key piece of Bitcoin's value proposition is its origin story. It makes it so unbelievably unique in human history as to be almost stranger than fiction. It's a sci-fi level tale what Bitcoin is. This is this idea and the network that Satoshi created is so unbelievably disruptive and unique in human history that it frankly has the capability of altering the entire course of the world. And, you know, nothing would, I think, maybe harm it more than some kind, you know, conclusive proof. And then the last point is there is no conclusive proof. This documentary broke no new ground. The person that it named denied it on screen and continues to deny it. And absent cryptographic proof, it really just doesn't matter. Even if we did have some type of other proof, if Satoshi doesn't have the keys or can't move coins to prove them, it just frankly really doesn't matter. So I don't know. It kind of felt, I did also enjoy the documentary, to be clear. I mean, it was well-produced, engaging, like it felt a little bit like gotcha kind of journalism, but it was perfectly fine to watch. But for those of us that have been wondering about this question, thinking about it, developing our thoughts on the theory of whether or not we should be unmasking Satoshi for years, it felt a little bit like I just found out about Bitcoin and I'm here to unmask Satoshi. Like, we've been down this path before, and basically it's cryptographic keys or bust.
That's right. Let's ask you about stablecoins. We have borrowing rates on stablecoins hitting highs. Can you translate that into what it might mean for Bitcoin? What's the quantitative takeaway there?
Yeah, that's a great question. Look, I'm not like super up on the exact moment like of where rates are today, but in general, there's been demand for dollars recently in the last few months in crypto because of really over the last month and a half. Bitcoin has been bid. And so people are looking to gain access and leverage. You've seen the market caps of the major stablecoins, the supplies has been rising. Like, that's typically been a strong indication of money flowing into the market as opposed to simply like rotating between assets. And again, you still see Bitcoin outperforming for the most part, you know, anything of its remote comparable market cap. Like, it doesn't really matter if like a, you know, 1 billion market cap coin outperformed Bitcoin today. Like, that's like comparing a penny stock to Google. But it signals demand. It signals search for leverage, like, and that typically means people are trying to be long Bitcoin.
Alex Thorne, Galaxy, head of research, thank you so much for always giving us your thoughts and breaking down your segment of the market. Tell people where to find you and your reports, please.
Yeah, Nick, thank you so much. Check me out on Twitter, Intangible Coins. Check out Galaxy Research, GLXY Research on Twitter, and galaxy.com/research.
Alex Thorne, thanks again. We'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks, Nick.